If you're in a sport or game competition, scoring is really the one and only way to measure success and accomplishment. The same holds true with education. Given that it's a process which is intended to prepare students for competition in the professional world, testing has been the traditional as well as debated means to score students and measure the education process. And that system of testing has changed in New Jersey recently, along with other states, with the introduction of the Computer-Based Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers Testing, otherwise known as PARC, versus the old-school pencil and paper test. Some states have been dropping the PARC tests after the first year. New Jersey, along with a few others in Washington, D.C., have retained them. Here to discuss the value and the criticism of the PARC testing is the Vice President of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, Robert Ponticio. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
And the website for the Fordham Institute is edexcellence.net. And as I mentioned, Robert, second year of the PARC testing, some of the bugs, some of the complaints from year one were probably first and foremost, it took until about halfway through the school year before results were known, and the testing process was extended and long, and it seemed like the schools where student achievement was at the lowest was where the parents had the most objections to their students participating in the PARC testing. When we look
I think that's exactly the opposite. I mean, now maybe you've got better data than I have, but my impression was that you tend to see resistance to testing, the so-called opt-out movement, being at its most common in schools that serve largely affluent students. In fact, I was just reading a report just this morning from the Educational Testing Service, ETS, which made this point precisely, that opt-out seems to be most common among white, fairly affluent communities, and particularly among parents whose kids tend not to do as well on standardized tests.
The thing that was confusing, I mean, you look at school district county by county, at least in New Jersey at least, and it seemed like there was no trend, for lack of a better word. It seemed like you could look at any particular county and see the opt-out rates literally range from anywhere between 20 to as high as, I think, in the 60 percentile.
Yeah, about a year ago, and forgive me, I don't have this at arm's length, but I looked through data from the New Jersey State Department of Education, and in most instances it seemed that the opt-out rate was highest in school districts that were, as I described before, predominantly white and affluent, and less so in places like, say, Newark or Camden or Atlantic City or whatnot. Now, maybe that has changed this year. I have not seen the data this year, but it would surprise me if that changed. And this is not to cast aspersions on anybody's motivations, but if you think about it, the communities that have benefited most, arguably, from testing tend to be low-income families of color. And I'll give you a specific example. I mean, I still teach now when I'm not at Fordham. I teach at a charter school in Harlem. I used to teach in the South Bronx. If you think about the ripple effects of testing in the real world, the fact that we have such a robust charter school community, the fact that many states have embraced school choice in a way that they didn't a generation ago, is because communities of color, low-income communities, have been, frankly, badly underserved by traditional public education. Well, how do we know that? We know that by data, and that data means test scores. So if you think about it, the political will, the moral authority even, for things like charters and school choice come from testing. So it stands to reason that folks who have most benefited from enhanced choice and things like charter schools would be those least likely to opt out, because they've seen a cause and effect relationship between testing and positive outcomes in terms of enhanced choice for their children.
When it comes to the PARC testing, too, I think a lot of the objections we had, the head of the NJEA, Wendell Steinhauer, on the show a couple of weeks ago, it seems like teachers are not very pleased, and some of the school administrators not very encouraged by the PARC testing. Is that a result of because the results of the first year, and obviously year two to be determined, but it shows that there are voids in the success of the education system, and that's falling upon the teachers right now?
Yeah, that's a really complicated thing to unwind. But in general, you have to start with the fact that nobody loves testing. Okay, it's just, when you're a student, you don't love taking them. When you're a school or teacher, you don't love being held accountable for them. If you're running a school district, you don't love administering them, okay? So let's just get that out of the way. Ain't nobody ever going to love tests, period, full stop. What you're discussing, and I think quite correctly, is what do we do with the data? I mean, I will argue that testing, for all the reasons I described earlier, charters, choice, et cetera, which I support, has been in the main a great good thing. That said, you can't be blind to the fact that testing has had an outsized impact on the way we educate our children because of these things that you're describing, because of the accountability measures and whatnot. So there is there are a lot of stakes, as it were. We talk about high-stakes tests. That typically means high stakes for the adults in the system. A lot of our educational policies and accountability measures ride on these tests. So it shouldn't surprise anybody that people have these outsized reactions to them. So I tend to be the guy that says, look, you know, we need the data from testing, but yes, parents and teachers are not incorrect to complain about the impacts of testing. We simply need to be more thoughtful about getting our relationship with testing right. So in other words, I don't want to live without the data. I want to know as a parent, as an analyst, as a taxpayer, if we're getting the correct amount of return on investment, so to speak, for our education dollar. But I do not want those test results to dominate my kid's education. So, we tend to have these wild pendulum swings in education where we go from test everything that moves to let's stop testing altogether. That's a kind of a nuance-averse argument, both of those. But I do think that at the end of the day, we have a lot of work to do, and this has to be done on a state-by-state and district-by-district level, to say, all right, look, what behaviors do we want to incentivize with tests? How do we want to evaluate teachers? What should be the proper role of testing? I don't think it's okay for me sitting in Washington, New York City to dictate to the folks in New Jersey what that role should be, but I think that's a much more important conversation than just, opt out or take the tests or testing good, testing bad. These are kind of nuanced, averse arguments, and these are questions that are much, much more complicated than that.
If I recall, too, from the going into the first year of the park testing, it wasn't like this was just, all right, we just pulled the rug out from under you, put the pencils away, and sit down and learn how to work the computer. There were public hearings over a long period of time. There were practice sessions that did not count. There were schools that, if they were lacking the internet and the computer capabilities, they came in, got them up to speed. A few bumps along the road, granted. Welcome to the world of high tech and technology.
Yep.
But this wasn't a complete surprise. There was time for preparation and adaptation.
Yeah, look, I tend to agree with you, and I don't want to sound negative or hard-hearted, but Common Core and these new higher standards, whether you love them or hate them, this is not new anymore. This has been around for 5 or 6 years. In New York State, where I live, we had a big political fight over the amount of accountability that teachers should be, or how much each teacher should be held accountable for these test results, and that just set people's hair on fire. And I'm sympathetic to that because, again, as I keep saying, it's complicated to know exactly where to draw the line, but that added pressure did nothing, I think, other than get people very upset about these tests. And as strong as the opt-out movement has been in New Jersey, I think it's even stronger across the river in New York, especially in my home area of Long Island. But your point is well taken. I don't think that it will do to just say, hey, this was dumped on us, last week, so to speak. And that's where this gets complicated and, frankly, uncomfortable. In other words, these tests that we now have, the PARC test notably, is a much, much more comprehensive and difficult test than we are used to seeing when I was a full-time classroom teacher 10 or 15 years ago. So what you get back then is, for reasons I won't bore you with, the bar was really low for being proficient. So you could be a kid, like I saw this in my classroom all the time. I had kids who were adding and subtracting on their fingers, but according to the state test, they were on grade level, which is kind of nonsense. So whether you love or do not love these new tests and the Common Core standards, it's a much more, I would argue, realistic, real-world definition of college readiness, career readiness, of proficiency. And this has also made these tests much more unpopular, because who wants to be told that their kid is not where they need to be? Who wants to be told that their school is substandard, so to speak? But I'm, again, always the guy who says, look, you got to be patient. We didn't dig ourselves into this hole overnight. You can't look at 1 year's test result and say, well, that didn't work. That's not what standards do. That's not what assessments do. The value of these tests is it reveals a lot about our school system. It reveals a lot about not just teachers, but curriculum, about governance, about all kinds of things. But it's really important to be clear-eyed about where we stand. I'm not suggesting I don't have patience with a political argument, but at some point you have to use these test results as constructive feedback and say, okay, now what do we do?
Therein lies the reason for part of the title Within Park, Readiness for College and Careers.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So I guess what I'm expressing a little bit of frustration that at some point I wish we could just come closer to agreement that let's stop arguing whether these tests are good, bad, or indifferent, and start doing a deep dive on what they're telling us about our schools, about our students, and what we need to improve educational outcomes.
Certainly a much more viable path versus having to pay college tuition for the first, maybe even the second year, just for your son or daughter to learn what they should have been learning back in the 12th grade.
That's exactly right. And this is I bring this up all the time. You know, if you really want to see the disconnect, you know, what do we mean? It's one thing to say, you know, this student is not college ready, but that's a real-world consequence of it. You know, in some areas, especially at the two-year community college level, you see 60, 70, 80% of freshmen put in remedial English and math. And what that means, quite simply, is they emerged from high school unprepared to do even community college work. So, you know, don't take my word for it. Look at the data from your local community college. That's a pretty good referendum on where your local school system stands in terms of adequately preparing kids.
There is a reason. I know the noise against Park has been loud, but the reasons for their existence have their roots in logic, need, necessity, and for the future of your child, if you are the parent of a child in school, or really any children in school, you should have a concern for that as well. And to learn more about this issue, along with the work of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, it's edexcellence.net. We're joined by their Vice President, Robert Bondesio. Robert, thanks so much for being here this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. Anytime.